warning, this truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Your Life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today, we'll talk about the firefight in Pakistan that may have cornered Al-Qaeda's number two man, al-Zawahiri, and also the Tennessee County Commissioners who voted 8-0 toward wanting to outlaw homosexual behavior. Wow, as a crime against nature. And we hope to interview former Chief Justice Roy Moore of the Alabama Supreme Court in 15 minutes. All that this half hour and your calls, if we could squeeze them in, at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. The firefight in Pakistan that's going on right now is surrounding a high-value target. It's officially a Pakistani operation. Now, it'll be daylight in Pakistan in, what, 2 hours, 2.5 hours? And although America is most likely supporting this operation, it's officially a Pakistani troops operation, but undoubtedly we have satellite and predator surveillance. And what makes anyone think that al-Zawahiri might be there? Now, he's Osama bin Laden's number two guy. Well, Pakistani officials say that they have specific intelligence that a senior official, an al-Qaeda senior official, has been cornered. And the resistance there in the battle overnight has been fierce. So that's also an indicator. Now, a leading Pakistani journalist, he's the only reporter who's interviewed OBL, Osama bin Laden. He has confirmed that hundreds of al-Qaeda forces are living in the area in which the battle is taking place. So we have high hopes that, and apparently it seems that we're, our forces are at least near as the Afghanistan border to this, which is very close. And hopefully we have air support available to make sure nobody gets away this time, as happened at Tora Bora. But so we should know later in the evening. And of course, if any news flashes come during this show, we'll bring them to you. But it's exciting that we are getting closer to Osama bin Laden. And you know, the reports about we were just a day or two behind Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and we had reports coming out. We were a few hours behind him. He was there, and we got there, and he just left. And you get those reports, and you're not sure what to make of them. How do they know they were a day or two behind, a few hours behind? But apparently, much of that was accurate, and they were on his trail, and they finally found him in a hole in the ground. So he went from a palace to a bunker to a hole in the ground to a cell in a year since America decided to liberate Iraq. Not that the Iraqis are especially grateful at this moment, but things may still turn out well. But now in Pakistan, and we've said here at Bob and Your Live, we have said, oh, and by the way, this is our new time slot, 3 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock, 3 to 3:30 on 670 AM KLTT. We've said since Tora Bora, and every month or so since, that where is Osama bin Laden? He's in a basement in Pakistan. He's in a basement in Pakistan. So the region they're fighting now, right off the border of Afghanistan, if there are any basements in that area, he may be there, not too far from his lieutenant. So we're hopeful. Now, of course, John Kerry and the Democrats, they're scared to death that we'll capture UBL, Osama bin Laden. Well, they might prefer that we capture him early rather than in September, you know, because of the election, because Bush will get a bump in his popularity. But Americans are fabulous at not realizing what's at stake. And I'm not a Bush supporter. I'm not a Bush fan. Because of all the homosexuals he appoints to high public office, the pro-abortion judges, the socialist economic policies, the increase in welfare and just social services, it's all socialism, and the extraordinary spending utterly out of control, far beyond anything a Democratic president has ever done. And that's typical. Republican presidents typically spend out of control, far beyond what Democratic presidents spend. And that's been true for a half a century. So at any rate, I'm not a big Bush supporter. If he came out and said, I will never again support any governing official who believes it's okay to kill a single innocent child, if he said that, I'd support him. But he does the opposite. He's promised he would continue to nominate judges who are pro-choice, and that it is not his goal to overturn Roe v. Wade. So because of those reasons, I'm not a big Bush fan. But at the same time, I could see with John Kerry and the Democrats how weak they are on the war on terror. And they're just scared to death. You know that website, terroristforkerry.com? Was that? Did anybody take that yet? We've been suggesting that domain name for months. Maybe somebody's got to start a terroristsforkerry.com website. That would be funny. All right. And now, before the issue on the homosexuality, the effort to outlaw it in that county, Rhea County in Tennessee, before that, this just out by Reuters, Saddam Hussein thinks, you know, he's in jail and we're interrogating him. And he thinks he's outsmarting his interrogators, outwitting them. But according to sources with the United States government, we have extracted a lot of information from Saddam that might be used at his trial. And the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, said that Saddam's turned out to be a pretty wily guy who seems to be enjoying the give and take with his interrogators. And he sure thinks he's smarter than everyone else, that's for sure. And that's good. That's good that he thinks that and he's talking. You know, some of us would have liked them to execute Saddam within hours of his arrest, but it's a wise thing to get to extract all the information we can out of him. All right. Now, in Tennessee, this is just what a story this is. The same county that was the site of the Scopes trial. Remember the Scopes monkey trial over the teaching of evolution? Remember all that? And the evolutionists, they can never recall that story, that trial, without getting it completely wrong. But anyway, the lawmakers of that same county, Rhea County, R-H-E-A, the county commissioners have voted 8-0 asking the Tennessee state legislature to amend state law so that they can charge homosexuals with crimes against nature. Now, that is encouraging. That is very encouraging. And not that they'll succeed, but at least that's appropriate. It's appropriate that we say, not that, like George Bush is now saying, well, we need to act against homosexual marriage because this is judges legislating from the bench. Oh, and that's why homosexuality is wrong? You know, when judges make rulings that conservative Christians like, they don't complain about that. But we complain when judges make rulings that go against our beliefs. And the reason homosexuality should be opposed is not because some judges are making rulings legislating from the bench. That's not why, but because it's inherently immoral and criminal. It's criminal. Homosexuality, just like adultery, just like prostitution, just like pornography, just like child molestation, just like rape. These sexual crimes, they're not only sins, they're also crimes. What's the difference between a sin and a crime? What is the difference? By the way, our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. You know, we have a Bible study album, one of the albums that we have at our store online at kgov.com. And it's called Exodus Code, the Exodus Code. You know, God's justice system will help us evaluate our politicians, our laws, suggested laws. If you're going to vote on some amendment, is it a good idea or a bad idea? And it's neat to be an expert on what does the Bible say about government and about law and judges? What does the Bible say about the admissibility of evidence? What does it say about the standard for a conviction? You know, our system has beyond a reasonable doubt. What does the Bible say about the appeal process or the presumption of innocence? What does the Bible say about all those things? How about perjury? What does God say should be the punishment for perjury in the Bible? What does he say? He has opinions on these things. He does have opinions on these topics. And we, as conservative Christians, we have our own opinions on these topics, many of them. And we might know what the Constitution says or what English common law says or what the Republican Party says, but we typically don't even know what God says. We don't even know. What does God say should be the punishment for perjury? Ask the next 10 Sunday school teachers you meet, ask them that question. What does God say should be the punishment for perjury? And here's my prediction. You ask 10, how many will know? The answer is zero. Zero out of 10 will know. And so we think, well, we're politically active. We decide which candidates should get elected, which laws, amendments, what we should support, which changes in the law. But we don't even give God the courtesy of knowing what is his opinion on some of these matters, because we have summarily dismissed the Old Testament as it's irrelevant. And the New Testament portions that deal with law and governmental principles, we've ignored those also. So we come to the issue of law and government almost like blank slates, except that we do want to honor God, and we know there's such a thing as right or wrong, but from there on out, it's a free-for-all. It's potluck. Well, what do the Republicans have to say this go-around? Let's check out their platform. What do the Democrats say? You know, maybe those libertarians, they might have an idea. I think English common law is the source of truth. No, God is the source of all truth, all authority, resided in God, and he delegated authority to his creatures. And he, after Noah's flood, he instituted human government after the flood, not before. And God has opinions. And somebody might say, well, I think God's opinion is no longer applicable because of some theological reason. Okay, make that argument, but what is God's opinion? What does God say should be the punishment for perjury? And if you know what it is, you could say, well, here's what God said about perjury, and this is why I don't believe it's no longer applicable. But we Christians, and even our Christian leaders, we pretty much don't have a clue. We just don't know. So what does God say should be the punishment for perjury? We don't know. We just flat out don't know. Well, anyway, in Tennessee, the Rhea County commissioners, they're saying that homosexuality should be a crime. It's not just a sin. And they're exactly right. Old Testament, New Testament, the law for 3,500 years that we know of, even before Moses, if you go back to Sodom and Gomorrah, although that was God intervening supernaturally. But 3,500 years, the law has been that homosexuality is a crime. That homosexuality is a crime. That's what the law has been, right? And so now, what's going on now? Now, in the past 40 years, in America, we have decriminalized homosexuality. Why? Because the Bible changed? Did we get any new leaves, pages of the New Testament sent to us from heaven? Well, the Mormons did, but the Christians haven't. No. No, God has not updated the New Testament nor the Old Testament in the last 2,000 years. So why is it now that we are saying homosexuality all of a sudden should be legal? Well, I'll tell you who takes that position. Hillary does. Hollywood does. The humanists do. The homosexuals do. And so Christians have gone along. For the most part, Christians, and it seems like most Christian ministries even, have sided with Hillary, Hollywood, the homosexuals, the humanists, and saying, yeah, homosexuality should be legal. But in Rhea County, Tennessee, and this is fascinating, the county commissioners there have voted 8-0 to request state lawmakers. They want the Tennessee legislature to amend state law so that the county could charge homosexuals with a crime. Now, that's fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. And a commissioner there, J.C. Fugate, has introduced a measure because he believes that homosexuality is destructive. It's destructive, and the goal is we need to keep homosexuals away from our children, from influencing kids. And so, of course, you know, the homosexual activists in Tennessee and around the country are outraged, as they're saying. But this is not that we can pull this off, but that should be our goal. And this would be a return to what is good and right. Because not all sins are also crimes. Not all sins are actually criminal. Does that make sense to you? Some things are sins. For example, the Bible says, do not covet your neighbor's goods. So if you covet your neighbor's new car, that's a sin. The police and the judge, they have nothing to say about that sin. But the Bible also says, thou shalt not steal, so that if you steal your neighbor's car, first you covet it, the car, then you steal it. Once you steal it, that's also a sin. But now that sin also qualifies as a crime. Because society does not have to put up with that kind of destructive behavior. What is sin? Sin is those things that lead toward death, whether they're ideas and attitudes or actions. Sin are those things that lead toward death. Everything that's in rebellion or opposition against God is sin, because it leads to death. And then everything else is permitted and allowed, although some things are not as beneficial as other things. And then some things are flat out righteous and great to do and helpful. So the government doesn't have the authority to intervene when someone sins. No, if somebody sins and it doesn't rise to the level of a crime, I should say it doesn't sink to the level of a crime, then the government has no authority to get involved. Who gets involved then? Your husband, your father, your pastor, your friend, your boss, your neighbor, people seeing that you're destroying yourself and they talk to you. That's it. But if in our government, more and more our government and our culture, they have gutted the laws, so the laws, more and more, they allow all kinds of terrible crimes, like adultery was criminal for 3,500 years. Our laws now allow for adultery, but what do they do regarding civility and politeness? Now they're legislating civility, the liberals who say you cannot legislate morality, they're legislating civility. You get that? So if you're rude to someone, it could be a federal case. Because if you're rude to someone on some, say you say some despicable racial thing because you're a fool and you're a sinner and you're weak-minded, small-minded, and you say some stupid racial thing, that's a sin. But today, you could seduce a black man's wife and commit adultery and destroy his family, and the government will say that's legal. But if you used an epithet, a racial slur, then that's a federal case. You see how the difference between the threshold between sin and law? First, it was forgotten by the Christians so that we no longer know, so we just sit confused. Well, we don't know. We can't even judge. We have to forgive everyone. We don't know whether, how could something be a crime when we can't even judge them and we have to forgive them? So we're just confused and on the sidelines. And so then when we've allowed the blurring of the distinction, the threshold between sin and law, to get firmly set in the minds of the Christians, then we have the circumstance where the liberals want to stand everything on its head, as they do, and everything that's right they say is evil, and everything that's evil they say is good. And so now they've legalized despicable crimes, and they've criminalized sins and also other things that are not even sins. So, for example, in the Ten Commandments, we have the foundation of a criminal justice system in the Ten Commandments, right? Judge Roy Moore had, the former Chief Justice Roy Moore in Alabama, had the Ten Commandments monument in the state Supreme Court building. And the Ten Commandments, they form the foundation of a criminal justice system. They've got, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. That's perjury. So there is the foundation of a criminal justice system. And we Christians, we need to learn again, what did God say in the Bible about government? Now, coming up here in Colorado on April 8th, 2004, Thursday, is homeschool day at the Capitol. We've homeschooled our kids for a number of years, and we've got a six-year-old now in first grade. Our older kids have graduated. And former Chief Justice Roy Moore of the Alabama Supreme Court will be in Colorado, in Denver, on the west steps of the Capitol at noon for this homeschool rally, homeschool day at the Capitol. And if you remember that Chief Justice Moore, he's the guy who put everything on the line that is his career for the principles upon which America was largely founded. He took a stand refusing to compromise and said, we as civilians, as governing officials, we should acknowledge God. And he refused to remove the Ten Commandments monument from the Alabama State Supreme Court building. And I want to welcome Chief Justice Roy Moore to the show. Welcome, Justice.
Well, thank you, sir. It's very nice to be with you.
Well, we're thrilled that you are coming to Colorado April 8th. And we're going to encourage the folks in our audience, even those who are not homeschooling, to come on out.
Well, I would welcome the people, and it's a very important issue in which we face. The federal government is presently denying the states, it denied the state of Alabama in this case, of the right to acknowledge God. And I submit that when they do that, they basically violate the organic law of our country,
yeah,
which is the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, and even, Judge, now you're an expert on the law. I'm just the talk show host in the pastor.
Well, I won't go that far. But
well, I'm just the talk show host and the pastor of Denver Bible Church. But let me ask you this. In the U.S. Constitution, Article 7, is it not part of the Constitution? Because Article 7 makes a reference to Jesus Christ.
Surely it does, and in fact, the first part of Article 7 says the ratification of the conventions of nine states shall be sufficient for the establishment of the Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. That, too, makes a reference to an almighty God, and people don't understand it. But James Madison certainly understood it in Federalist 43 on January 23rd, 1788, when he said that it could take just nine states to ratify the new Constitution, and some people, he argued, might say, well, why doesn't it take 13? The Articles of Confederation were ratified by 13 states.
Right.
How could nine do away with what 13 states have done? He said, the immutable laws of nature and the nature's God gave them that right. So he said the same thing that Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence, that that basically God gave us our rights and government was there to secure them.
All right. Now, the next part of that, the next sentence of the of Article 7 of the U.S. Constitution, I think has a direct reference to Jesus Christ. Is that right, or am I misreading that?
No, it does. It dates in
I've got it right here, done in convention. So the ratification of this Constitution, done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states, present the seventh day of September in the year of our Lord.
Right.
1787. Now, that does that refer to Buddha?
No, no. It's referring to Jesus Christ. And it also, because of the dating, people don't realize that at that time, that dating system was very new. In fact, a few years later in France, they tried to depart from that dating system. And the war they had there, the French Revolution.
Yeah, which was a rather evil war.
That's right.
Right.
And but that dating system was relatively new at this time.
And so they when they said in the year of our Lord 1787, you go back 1787 years, and you come to the time when Christians believe that's that we remember the nativity of Jesus Christ, so that the Constitution, so far from prohibiting any reference to God in government or public discourse, the Constitution refers to Jesus Christ as our Lord.
Well, you know, that's very true. And what you've got to recognize is the very law of the First Amendment recognized the right to acknowledge God. That was the whole purpose of the First Amendment, the freedom to worship God according to the dictates of our conscience. And indeed, that was the reason for the First Amendment. There's a direct relationship, by the way, between the First Amendment and the first commandment, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. It was this very God, the God of the Holy Scriptures, the God of the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that had given the Ten Commandments and indeed given us freedom of conscience to worship him according to the dictates of our conscience. And that's the basis of the First Amendment, that government could not interfere with such a freedom.
So, Justice Roy Moore, if there are people listening in the audience, this station we're on, KLTT, is a 55,000-watt station. And so there are people who are not Christians in the audience.
Sure.
And they're hearing you talk about a government that acknowledges Jesus Christ, and it might scare them because they'll think that we want to force them into a Christian church to read the Bible and to proclaim faith in the Savior.
Well, no. You see, the very acknowledgement of God is preliminary to the freedom to worship as you feel.
Right.
This was made very clear by our forefathers, who said that the freedom to worship God was outside of the dictates of the federal government. Indeed, they recognized that God gave you this freedom. Christianity, which is one form of worshiping this God, and was a major form in which this country was founded. In fact, in 1892, the United States Supreme Court said that this is a Christian nation. And when they said that, they weren't talking about establishment. In other words,
no.
People could not be forced to worship God as a Christian by government because,
right.
In fact, let me quote to you, if I can remember it, a quote from James Madison and the Memorial Remonstrance.
And Judge, the show ends in 1 minute, just to let you know.
Okay. He said, whilst we assert for ourselves the freedom to embrace, profess, and observe the religion which we believe to be of divine origin, we cannot deny an equal freedom to those whose minds have not yet yielded to the evidence which has convinced us. If this freedom be abused, it is an offense against God, not against man. To God, therefore, not to man, must an account of it be rendered. They believe that if someone were to force you to worship God in a certain way, even as a Christian, mm-hmm. you would offend not just man's law, but God's law, because that is a freedom given to man. And, of course, it was the freedom upon which this nation was founded.
Amen. Chief Justice Roy Moore, your website is morallaw.org.
Yes.
We are really out of time, but we're looking forward to seeing you on April 8th at the Capitol.
I will be looking forward to coming to the great state of Colorado.
God bless you. Justice Roy Moore. Boy, that's a thrill to talk to him. His battle over the Ten Commandments, it's not over. It's a battle that's been at the center of the human struggle for millennia. And it's a battle that Denver Bible Church, we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we're going to take to the people. So do right and risk the consequences. Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart with our Denver Bible Church update. Well, next week is our last week at 7 o'clock in the evening on KLTT, and we have moved the show to 3 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. And so far, it's going well. It's a lot of fun, actually. For me, it's knowing that we're on in full power. Knowing that we're on in full power makes a difference, and that we could reach listeners in all the surrounding states around Colorado. Well, most of the surrounding states. Colorado borders up against quite a few states. So we're just excited about the move, and we hope that you're excited with us and that you could make the move. We don't want to leave anyone behind or lose people because of the time change. And I know it's very likely that we will, but we just don't want to. So if we can help, if you've listened to the show for the last couple years at 7 and you just can't get it at 3 o'clock, well, perhaps you might consider getting it online or getting our monthly Best of Bob. We mail the 8 best shows of the month out. And if some people can't afford that. So if you can't afford that, but you're going to miss the show, let us know. And at any rate that you can afford, let us know. We normally, people pay $49.95 a month for that. And if you are going to miss the show unless you get that, let us know. And we'll see if we can provide that for you at any amount that you can afford. All right. So normally in the Denver Bible Church update segment, we don't take calls. But we're going to take a call because it's about the Bible, and I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. So let's go to Indianapolis, Indiana. Aaron, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Hello, sir. Doing well.
Okay. I got into a discussion with somebody yesterday who thinks that they can pick and choose which parts of the Bible they're going to follow and which parts they're not going to follow.
Okay. Well, that's...
Their rationale was,
yeah,
I consider myself a Republican, but I don't agree with everything that Republicans... everything that's on a Republican's platform.
All right.
I'd say that doesn't make any sense.
No, that's a dangerous rationale because you say, I consider myself a follower of God, but I don't necessarily believe everything God says. So
Right. Immediately
that analogy breaks down. But I think all Christians will look at the Bible and see that there are places in the Bible where it says you cannot wear clothing of mixed fabrics. And we look at that and we see that it appears that that is no longer a standard of behavior that God expects from us. And so we ask the question, well, why? Are we correct or are we wrong? Like when God in the Bible said, Ezra the priest told the believers that if you were married to Gentile wives, you should divorce them. And they did. They all divorced their wives according to the Mosaic law. And in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul says, even if you're married to an unbeliever, you should stay married.
Yes.
So there are a number of rules in the Bible that God has changed. Like with Adam and Eve, he said they're all vegetarians. And then after the flood, God said to Noah, now you can eat meat. All animals are good. All animals are good. And then with Moses, God said, now you can only eat the clean animals. And then most Christians believe that God said in the New Testament with Paul, now you could eat all animals again like you could with Noah.
Okay.
So these bring up valid questions. Are there changes in the rules? And if there are, how do we identify them? Aaron, would you like to hang on?
Yes.
And why don't you present your questions more clearly when we get into the show here in a minute?
Okay.
And we'll talk through this a bit. All right, so... This is one of the topics we cover at Denver Bible Church, which is how do we know what in the Bible we're supposed to follow and how do we know what God has changed? It's fascinating. So come visit us at Denver Bible Church. And right now, stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
Service with the weak and the not.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And we're going to talk a little bit about Howard Stern and radio, you know, the filthy radio talk show hosts who are now concerned that they're going to lose their shows. And so they've been turning it down in the last couple weeks. So we'll talk about some of that and what things are like in Iraq a year after the war began. I've got mail here. We'll look at the mail. And then the woman whose baby died in Utah because she refused to have a C-section, and Melissa Ann Rowland, her baby died. Doctors in different hospitals told her she had to have a C-section. Her husband has said she didn't want the C-section at first because she's a drug addict and she didn't want to spend the extra time in the hospital. And so one of her babies died that, by all medical accounts, could have lived if only she would have cared enough about her children to have the C-section. So there's an article in USA Today that groups rally behind mother. And Cheryl picked it up, and Cheryl said, yeah, obviously we know what groups rallied behind the mother, right? It'd be the usual suspects, the NOW, Planned Parenthood, ACLU. So you read the article. Women's groups, abortion rights groups, and the ACLU have taken up her cause. The National Organization for Witches, Planned Parenthood, and the ACLU, Antichrist Litigation Unit, or the Antichrist Legions of the Underworld, and Banned Parenthood. So anyway, and obviously every time a mother, if she kills her kids, she drowns her kids, all these same women's groups come forward and they make her the new patron saint of their movement, because when you kill your own children, that's when you've reached the ultimate status in the pro-abortion world we live in. When you kill your own children, you're like a high priestess. And that's when they rally. You are their hero. You're their poster child. So let's go back to the phones in Indiana. Our phone number is 1-800-836-9278. We're speaking with Aaron. And Aaron, why don't you explain a little bit more about what your conversation had been?
Basically, the main point that they were trying to make was that homosexuality is okay because it doesn't hurt anybody. Which,
that's pretty bad.
That's very bad.
Right. For one, God said it was a perversion.
Right.
An abomination. It's evil, and it was illegal. It's criminal.
Right.
So that should be enough. But for two, it is so utterly destructive. It's destroyed the empires that have embraced it, and it undermines the moral fabric of society. It destroys the bodies and the minds of the people who practice it.
Right.
And they end up typically in hell after living a short, miserable life of addicted to alcohol or drugs and depression and shaking their fist against God, and they end up dying and going to hell.
That's true, because I can't think of maybe one homosexual in my life that I've met that wasn't a drug addict or an alcoholic.
Well, that's, you know, alcohol abuse and drug abuse is significantly higher in the homosexual community.
Yes.
That's probably, I don't know, and now from what I've read and seen and talked to homosexuals in the lifestyle, I know that that's true in the male homosexual community, and I believe it's also true among female homosexuals. We call them FOMOs. But anyway, yeah, real bad. And so the person you were talking to claimed to be a Christian?
They claimed to be a Christian, but they thought homosexuality was okay. Abortion's okay. It should be a woman's choice.
Oh, brother.
I mean, they got on me for wearing a leather jacket, and then immediately I knew.
You knew that they would support killing unborn children.
Right. That's always the way it is.
You knew it because they want to protect animals.
Right.
And that is the way it is because... Right. Because liberals hate Jesus Christ,
yes.
And after that, they hate human beings because of their self-hatred. And so they, you know, it's hard to hate everything. So they worship dirt, they worship the earth, and they worship nature, which is
like recycling and all, like toilet bowls and sewers. They worship all that. They worship germs and bugs and animals and trees and dirt. They're dirt worshipers. Because they hate God. They hate the Creator, so they have to worship his dirt.
I mean, they pretend to love God, but, I mean, I don't really understand how you can you can say you believe that God is the supreme being. He created everything. He's the beginning of everything. But he's going to give you a rule, and you're not going to follow it because you don't really agree with it. I just don't understand that. And
well, it's good that you find it hard to relate to that because humbling your heart before God is something that's a learned behavior. Because by nature, we're prideful. And our attitude is, don't tell me what to do. So pro-aborts, Planned Parenthood, they're people who say, don't tell me what to do. I want to kill this baby because it's inconvenient. And we're pro-life, and we say you have to love your neighbor, love your child. Don't tell me what to do. So pro-lifers say, don't kill unborn children. Pro-aborts say, don't tell me what to do. So it's a huge problem. You know, speaking of dirt, and they worship the creation and all, did you hear the story about the God offering a challenge to scientists to say, see if you could create life on your own? And so,
I haven't heard of that.
So the scientist took God up on the offer and said, all right, I can do it. So he grabbed a handful of dirt, like God made Adam from the dust of the ground. And he grabbed a handful of dirt, and God said, oh, no. Go get your own dirt. That's my dirt. I made it. And it is weird that they worship the creation. They worship animals. And they hate God. You know, they do hate God, even if they say they're Christians. Like, we have liberals call on the show once in a while. They're liberals. They're pro-homosexual, pro-child killing, pro-socialism. So they violate all of God's commandments.
Yeah, and I don't really hear them calling very much because they're afraid. I mean, they usually get smoked if they call on your show and try to debate you on anything.
Well, that's nice of you to say that. But, you know, we've been on Christian radio in the evenings for two and a half years now. And radio in the evenings is a smaller audience, and Christian radio is smaller than secular radio. And so it's been hard to attract liberal callers to the show because, most of them are watching primetime TV, some filthy network show.
Well, I remember I used to watch you on TV
a
few years back, and then I lost track of the show. I got on the Internet a couple of months ago, and I typed you in and found your website.
Oh, I'm so thrilled, Aaron. It's great to get to have you in the audience again. You know, in the radio, the TV show, a reason we had so many negative callers is because we were on in 80 cities for a few years, and we're on TV at night, which is where most of the audience is. We got to go to the phone to the commercial. We'll be right back.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOB.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. I'm going to read a letter, this letter, in the commercial break. That's unusual, right? But here's why. Bob Inyart Live, this is a talk show. And we sell products to stay on the air. But we're not a normal business here. People call in, and my office manager is even worse than the office manager. His wife gives stuff away. So this woman from Reno, Nevada calls in, and they're talking. My office manager's wife and this woman, April, from Nevada, they're talking about the debate, does God exist? 170-page written debate with Zaket the Atheist from Theology Online. And we sell that. We sell that, a real nice printed copy of it, for $19.95 plus shipping and handling. So April says, oh, that sounds interesting, but I don't have the money for that. So my office manager's wife says, oh, that's no problem. We'll just send it to you. And so you wonder why we're going out of business. So anyway, and she said, if you like it, go ahead and then pay for it if you feel like it. So here's the letter. Just came in today, postmarked Reno, Nevada, 15th of March, 2004. And here's the letter. And here's the check. And the letter from April. Hi, I'm enjoying the debate so much. I've decided to keep it. Here's the check for $22 enclosed. Thanks, April. All right, Bob Enyart here. 1-800-8-ENYART is our phone number. 1-800-836-9278. And, yeah, that was neat, that letter, just right a minute before the show. I opened up that letter. Somebody said to me, Bob, read this letter. And it's just encouraging. And we tell people, you know, we have got some materials on understanding the Bible and learning how to witness and things that you can directly share with unbelievers, family members, you know, coworkers, neighbors, friends, enemies, that are so powerful. This debate, does God exist? I mean, most Christians know somebody who's an agnostic or an atheist and doesn't believe in God or is not sure. And so this 170-page, a written 10-round moderated debate on does God exist, it is so much fun. Stephen Sutherland, how old is Stephen Sutherland? 14? He, you know, he's a friend of ours. His family goes to Denver Bible Church. He's done recorded Bible studies with me for a year in the studio. He's 14. So he says, I want to read that Does God Exist with Zaketh. So it's Stephen, you're here. You help us all the time. Just take a copy. Here's a copy. Just take it. He said, no, I don't want to do that. I got paid this week. I want to pay for it. Said, Stephen, will you not pay for it? Just take. No, I want to pay for it. So he paid for it to help support Bob Enyart Live. And it's 170 pages, you know, in large, 8.5 by 11 pages, regular 12 point size font. So it's a big debate, 10 rounds. And the next day, he says, Bob, that was really fun, that debate. I mean, I said, Stephen, what do you mean it was really fun? I know, we did it a year, half in the summer. It was fun. He said, no, reading it was fun. I said, well, when are you going to read it? I read it. When did you read it? Last night. Last night, 170 pages. Do you know how long it took me to write that, Stephen? You read it in one night? What's going on here? I feel like my wife spends 9 hours making a Thanksgiving dinner. We eat it in 20 minutes. Anyway, it is a fun debate to read. Does God Exist? Bob Enyart versus Zaketh. And I want to thank Aaron for calling in. And, of course, he was right to criticize those pseudo-Christians, those United Methodist Christians who no longer are Christians. And they're just liberals with the Jesus said, beware of wolves in sheep's clothing. And he said, I'd rather you be hot or cold. If you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth. It's better to be just flat out evil and tell everyone, I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I reject him. I'm a child killing sodomite socialist who's against the death penalty and everything good. That's better than saying, oh, I'm a Christian and I believe in all these evil things. It's better just to be evil. Right? Isn't it better just to be evil? Wouldn't you say to someone, look, if you're filthy, be filthy. Isn't that a godly sentiment? Now, I think that's a godly Christian sentiment. Now, I know some Christians might disagree. If you disagree, I'd like to hear that with my own ears. I don't understand how somebody could really disagree with that. But I think it's a godly sentiment to say, look, if you're filthy, be filthy. If you're ignorant, be ignorant, right? If you're filthy, be filthy. If you're unjust, be unjust. You're a liar, be a liar. You're ignorant, be ignorant. Isn't that a Christian sentiment? Or is that not a Christian sentiment? I think it's Christian. And I may not be an expert on what's Christian, but I'm a pastor, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and Bible's in our name. And regardless of how good we are at it, we sure make an effort to study the Bible and understand it. So I think it's a very Christian attitude to say to unbelievers, like let's say a homosexual, and you're trying to share the gospel with him, and he's bragging about his lifestyle, and you say, look, you're filthy, stay filthy. You're filthy, you're a filthy person, stay filthy. Now, do you think that's Christian? I think it is. 1-800-8-NYART. The number here is 1-800-836-9278. Speaking of filthy, a story at USA Today today on Howard Stern and a couple other radio shock jocks, as they call them, Mancow Mueller out of Chicago, and another show from Washington, D.C., Elliot in the Morning. Now, they're talking about ever since the Super Bowl. Boy, you know, Janet Jackson did conservative Christians a favor by she overplayed her hand. That's what Osama bin Laden did on 9/11. He overplayed his hand. That's what the Japanese did on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. They overplayed their hand. And that's what the homosexuals are doing now with homo marriage. They're overplaying their hand. And so there ends up being a backlash, and each of these groups have lost the battle that they started. And so here, this story out of USA Today today about radio's top shock jocks have toned it down. And here's a couple examples. And some of these are actually sort of funny. On his radio show yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, Chicago shock jock Mancow Mueller. Now, I've never heard his show, but I've heard his name, Mancow. Apparently a real idiot. Sort of like that guy that I've been on Politically Incorrect with on two occasions. He's got some pervert show. His name is The Man Show. The name of his show, I mean. And when I've been on that show, I think I've only been on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher when it was on ABC. Not when it's on cable now, but I've been on, I think, four or five times. And twice I was on with this guy from The Man Show, whatever his name is. Doesn't matter. He's going to hell. If you're filthy, be filthy. Anyway, the first time I said to him, we used to have comedians on TV. Now we just have crotch humorists. So I said, you're a crotch humorist. That's what you are. And that hit him pretty hard. He didn't like it. And so the next time, must have been a year later, I don't know. I'm back on the show. And they tape it in Los Angeles. They did when it was on ABC. Back on the show, there's four guests plus Bill Maher. And here's the same guy from The Man Show. And so, and I'm on the show with him again. And I make the same comment since it got under his skin the last time. I said, look, you're not a comedian. You're a crotch humorist. And anybody could do that. It's filthy. It's cheap. And you get 13-year-old boys to laugh at what, you know, just say anything about bathroom, restroom humor or immorality, and 13-year-old boys will laugh. So congratulations. You and Howard Stern are good at that. But you're a crotch humorist, and he didn't like it. He got angry. And he said to Bill Maher, he said, who is this guy? Nobody knows him. He's just on this show. That's it. That's right. I'm your guardian angel. So anyway, this guy in Chicago, this radio guy, Mancow Mueller, what he did on his show yesterday morning, instead of his normal sexual filth, is he read his mother's recipe for bundt cake on the air. He read a recipe for cake. I think that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Since you can't act like a juvenile 13-year-old telling bathroom humor, he has nothing else to say. Maybe he'll come up with something. So he was recently fined by the Federal Communications Commission $42,000 for a bit he did on the Bill Clinton-Monica Lewinsky scandal. And so he says he has to tone down his show. Now, also, you know, after the Janet Jackson Super Bowl deal, there's this heightened concern in the media. And so the filthiest radio shows are changing what they're doing. And the publisher of Talkers Magazine, Michael Harrison, he doesn't really like that. He says the government has a crushing influence. And, you know, the House of Representatives last week voted to boost the maximum fine that could be given to a broadcast outlet, radio or TV, from $27,000 up to $500,000. That's a big increase. Now, the Senate hasn't done anything yet, but they're due to do something soon. And so broadcasters are under this increased pressure in a magnifying glass. With the FCC, it's been ramping up enforcement. So last week, the FCC proposed a $250,000 fine because, you know, the maximum is $27,000, but that's per radio station. So if you're a syndicated show and you're on a lot of stations, then you could be fined, you know, 10 stations would be $250,000. So now they want to up it to $500,000 fine. So 10 stations would be $5 million. And if Howard Stern, how many shows is he on? Two stations, 300, 200 stations? So 200 stations times $500,000 each, that'd be $100 million. So that's a significant fine. And Clear Channel has already dumped Howard Stern. Clear Channel is the largest radio network in the country. Now, he's still on the, I always get it confused, it's the CBS radio network he's still on. And that's the bulk of his outlets. But, oh, and by the way, is it a good idea for the government to fine broadcasters for indecency? Is that a good idea? No, it's not. Now, they should not put up with using the public airwaves for sexual immorality. That should not be permitted. But fines are a bad idea. Why are fines a bad idea? Well, you know how everybody, judges, lawyers, prosecutors, jurors, governor, everybody's concerned about conflict of interest, right? Oh, you can't be the judge if you're a conflict of interest. Okay, you can't be this or that. Conflict of interest, conflict of interest, conflict of interest. Scalia can't be on the case with Vice President Dick Cheney because they're friends. Conflict of interest, conflict of interest. Well, if the punishment for a crime is that the government gets $10 million, isn't that a conflict of interest? If you have some little county sheriff's department and the more cars they stop for speeding, the more money is in the sheriff's budget, isn't that a conflict of interest? Just test it. Just say that the money no longer goes to the county treasury. It goes somewhere else, and see if the number of speeding tickets stays the same or goes down. All right, isn't that neat? April sent that letter from Reno, Nevada. I've been in Reno, I think, only once in my life. And what a beautiful city. Just absolutely gorgeous. And good skiing there. I think my brother moved there 30 years ago to be a skiing instructor. Is that what he did? Yeah, my brother's an excellent skier until he came to visit me in Arizona and he got injured. And that's been 20 years now. He hasn't skied all that much. But anyway, Reno's a beautiful, beautiful city, and we're thrilled to have a friend and a listener there who's now a fan of the Does God Exist debate. This is Bob Enyart with a live commercial break. And boy, am I thrilled that April enjoyed the debate so much, Does God Exist, that after getting a free copy in the mail, she paid for it. And that, you know, we tell people 30-day money-back guarantee. Maybe we should do it this other way. Maybe we should send everything out for free and you only pay if you like it. I don't know. That sounds like a business model destined for failure. But maybe it would work. Maybe we should offer people the option. So the materials we have for helping to get people saved, for example, Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection. That is such a neat video. And then we have Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, probably the best video ever produced. Now, that one we didn't do. It was a third-party video. Against Evolution on VHS or DVD. Fabulous videos. And this on VHS, Mount St. Helens, showing that canyons and strata and canyons could be laid down not in millions of years but in hours and days. So we've got so many neat tools. Blessed Debate, Does God Exist, Bob Enyart versus Zaketh. So you're going to want to check it out. If you haven't seen any of these or read these, please give us a call. It'll help support the show, and we think you'll love it. And then you could loan it to an unbeliever or a Hindu or somebody and get them saved. We'll work on them together. All right, we're back. 1-800-836-9278. Bob Enyart here. So, fines are a bad idea. Fines are unbiblical. God never authorized the government to fine criminals. And why wouldn't God do that? Because it's a bad idea. It's a guaranteed conflict of interest. When a big chunk of the judicial system is funded by fining criminals, don't you think somewhere along the line, being human, there's a conflict of interest struggle where the more criminals, the more revenue to pay the judges and the prosecutors and the defense attorneys who get paid by the court, court-appointed attorneys, and the clerks and the cashiers and the whole bit and the county commissioners. So if we take in a couple $1 million a year from traffic tickets, do you think we're really motivated to figure out if there's a way to stop people driving dangerously? Or maybe the revenue is actually rather tempting. And the same thing with this. I mean, if the FCC starts taking in $40 million a year, that's going to be really hard to try to turn off that spigot and say, you know, we got to stop this. We don't have to stop it. We'll just regulate it. And Howard Stern will have that as part of their budget. Right? Their budget, they'll just budget, like you budget 3% advertising, 1.5% insurance, 12% taxes, 46% salaries. Well, they'll budget 7% fines. And the shows that don't budget will go out of business, and the ones that do will get a bigger, more solidified audience because they're on the air doing it against the law. So fines are a bad idea. What should it be instead of fines? Well, these are publicly owned airwaves. So for a first or second offense, the Bible talks about flogging. I think my office manager would volunteer, get Howard Stern there. Now, that'd be a segment for a show, huh? Howard Stern crying out with 15 lashes. Second offense, 35 lashes. Third offense, the stations that carry the show lose their broadcast license. And do you think Clear Channel wants to lose 850 KOA, the license for that? Our weaker, older brother in Denver here, right up on the right of the dial? No, Clear Channel doesn't want to lose the license for that. So what would they do? Dump Howard Stern or risk losing their license? They're going to dump Howard Stern. So then, in California, there's this NPR programmer who's been fired from her National Public Radio in Southern California. Their flagship station is in L.A. It's KCRW. I'm sorry, it's based in Santa Monica. And they fired one of their programmers who did a weekly show because in her program that aired, someone intentionally used the F word and they let it go out over the air. So they fired her. And her name is Sandra Singh Low. Sandra Singh Low, T-S-I-N-G. And, of course, the liberals are all up in arms because how this is really dampening. It has a chilling effect on the employees who work in National Public Radio. A chilling effect? What? They're thinking, now we can't let the F word go out over the air for, you know, untold people, including children, to hear it, including parents driving with their kids in the car, school kids. Now we can't use the F word. So it's a chilling effect. Good, you idiots. It's supposed to be a chilling effect. What do you think? Morons? Well, anyway, that man cow Mueller in Chicago, he said, this has been devastating. Hit music, commercials, anything sexual, I'm no longer airing it. That's great. That's excellent. The rules are not clear, said Mancow, but I'm not taking any chances. Very good. See, we can't clean up the filth if we try. Now, Howard Stern, this is, again, according to USA Today today. Howard Stern, who has taken off 6 Clear Channel stations February 24th, now spends most of his program time attacking the FCC, attacking President Bush, and Clear Channel. Sounds like Bob and Your Live. Sounds like Howard Stern's copying this show. So he tells his 8 million listeners that we are in a culture war. He must be plagiarizing Bob and Your Live. That's my show. Attacking the government, attacking President Bush, attacking major media outlets, spending most of his time telling his audience we're in a culture war. So anyway, and he is committed to committing his show for the rest of the year to trying to defeat Bush in the election. That's his goal. And personally, I don't care who wins the election. Unless there's someone who's running who says, I'm against killing unborn children and I will not nominate judges who support killing unborn children. If there's a candidate like that, then I'd be all for him winning. But since the candidates all say that we're against overturning Roe v. Wade, and we do not disqualify judges when they're pro-abortion for nomination, then all the candidates who say that, I'm against them. Just like if I lived in Germany in the 1930s or in the 1940s and somebody was running for office and all my Christian friends said, oh, he's the best one running. He's got a chance to win. And he said, you know, I'm against killing most Jews, but when you nominate judges, most judges believe in the Holocaust. And so I don't support overturning the Holocaust, but I'll try to nominate, you know, I will nominate judges who believe in that it should be legal to kill Jews because I don't want to be an extremist. You see, if I lived in Germany during the 40s, I would not vote for that guy. Now, if you'd like, you could try to tell me what's the difference between that guy and George W. Bush. I cannot discern a difference. I can't discern a difference, so I'm certainly not going to vote for Bush unless he repented between now and the camp and the election. All right. Oh, and today we had a guest on the show at 3 o'clock. We had Judge Roy Moore, Chief Justice, former Chief Justice Judge Roy Moore of the state of Alabama, the guy who put up the Ten Commandments monument, and he stood by honoring God and acknowledging God as the source of government and law, and eventually he lost his job, but he didn't compromise, and that was so neat. He was on the show today, and he'll be in Colorado April 8th at noon on the steps, west steps of the Capitol for a homeschool day at the Capitol. So the homeschoolers will have a display inside the Capitol building on homeschooling, and they'll have the rally on the steps with Chief Justice Roy Moore. So it was good to have him on the show today. We talked about the U.S. Constitution, its reference to Jesus Christ as our Lord, which virtually no Christian leaders know that's in there, and certainly no secular leaders know. You'd think you'd hear the Christians once in a while pointing it out. You know, when the liberals are saying America's Constitution is it's not Christian, and it calls for a separation of church and state, and you think at least a Christian leader once in every 5 years would say, well, you know, the U.S. Constitution does refer to Jesus Christ as our Lord. It does say that in there. So we had Judge Roy Moore on, and he confirmed that for us, that our eyes were not getting blurry in reading things that were really not there. It does say that. So that was pretty cool. All right. So anyway, in the meantime, Howard Stern's show is becoming more and more like Bob and Earl Live. So that's a development. Now, when Howard Stern is in hell, assuming he never repents, which I would say would be a reasonable bet. If Las Vegas took odds on people's salvation, you couldn't make much money betting on Howard Stern getting saved. But when he's in hell, you know, he'll probably still like radio, but he won't have a microphone. But there'll probably be speakers in hell, so he'll be able to listen to the radio but not produce his own show. So in the options, what will the options be? Sean Hannity, Bob and Earl Live, James Dobbs. He's not going to like it there. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. The 7 o'clock show at night, this is a live commercial break. It's only going to be on for another week or so. So if you've had topics you've wanted to call in, talk about questions, answers that we never gave here on this show, feel free. You're cordially invited to call in, chat about anything you'd like over the next week or so. But what I would be most thrilled to accomplish in this last week is if there's somebody out there who's friends of the 7 o'clock Bob and Earl Live show who wants to go with us to Turkey. Oh, are we going to have a good time? We're leaving May 26th for 17 nights and round trip airfare out of Chicago, the whole land tour through Turkey. We have an expert guide, Bora Ozkok. He's been doing tours in Turkey for 30 years, and he'll be retiring soon. So this is one of the last opportunities to go with Bora to Turkey, and then I'm going to do the Bible portion of the tour. So it'll be a Bora and Bob tour, trip of a lifetime. It really will be. We'll travel around in luxury in a 2002 Mercedes bus with onboard facilities. We've got a hotel in each of the cities that we're going to go to. Beautiful hotels, great places to stay, nice restaurants, breakfast and dinners included. It's what, $3,500 per person. And a husband and wife, of course, come along. If we've got a couple, few single guys coming, right? Mostly, I don't. Oh, we've got hey, Ray Graybar's wife, Dorothy, is going. You know, we're going to have such a good time. Mike Thiemann, Randy Hayes from California. If you like to travel and you want to learn more about the Bible, try to come along. NUR 1-800-836-9278. So that Sandra Singh Lal out in California, who got fired from an NPR radio station there, she said that I could get fired over this has everybody there in a white hot panic. Ha! A white hot panic? What? Why would they be a white hot panic? Do they can't control themselves putting the F word in their programming? What, do they all have Tourette's syndrome or something? What are they in a white-hot panic for? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Why would they be white-hot? They'd say, you know what? I guess we can't use the F word in our programming because it's going out over the public airwaves. And not only are there men and actually ladies tuning in sometimes, well, to NPR, not too many ladies, mostly females. But there's also children, and so we probably shouldn't use the F word. They're just so despicable, these liberals. They're so utterly despicable. So, get rid of that story. All right, what else is going on? 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. There is a judge in Panama City, Florida, that's such an idiot. You know, if you're filthy, be filthy. Boy, does he qualify. If you're filthy, be filthy. Circuit Judge Michael C. Overstreet. I don't even think I'm going to tell you the ruling. It's just too despicable even to mention it on the air. I'm not even going to tell you the rule. I'm not. He's just a filthy pervert. You want to be filthy? Stay filthy. See where it's going to get you. Let me see if it says. Let me get that out of the track. Does it say how old this judge is? Well, it doesn't say, but he's a circuit court judge, so chances are he's not in his 20s. Right? How old's your typical circuit court judge? 50? So, by demographics, statistically speaking, he's closer to the grave than he is to his high school graduation. So he'll be meeting God soon enough. And, you know, as I think it's a Christian attitude. Is it Christian or no? To say to him, look, you want to be filthy? Stay filthy. You want to be evil? Stay evil. You want to be ignorant? Be ignorant. You want to be ignorant? See if I care. Be ignorant. Is that a Christian attitude? Because that's my attitude. That's how I feel. You know, I help them. You know, I help a little bit by saying, hey, this is not right. You need to repent. But then they become emboldened in their wickedness and no shame. And so at that point, it's like, hey, you know, don't cast your pearls before swine. Is that a Christian attitude? I don't know. Maybe it's not. But that's my attitude. Don't cast your pearls before swine. He's unclean. If you walk through Panama City, Florida, where is that Where's get that article out of the chat. What city was that in? Panama City, Florida. The next time you go to Panama City, Florida, when you leave, wipe the dirt off your feet so you don't take their dirt back with you to your house. Just wipe the dirt off your feet. Because that's how filthy they are. Oh, by the way, Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, it's doing well. You know, we've been reporting since last Friday night when it was in fourth place in the all-time highest box office gross for R-rated movies. It was in fourth place. And we said Friday night it was going to pass The Exorcist, which was in third place, and it did. Last Friday night, The Exorcist was at $232 million. And then it passed Beverly Hills Cop. So now it's in second place. And number one, biggest domestic box office hit of R-rated movies ever, number one, is The Matrix Reloaded, $281 million. And so The Passion of the Christ, so $281 million for The Matrix Reloaded. The Passion of the Christ, $273 million. It's catching up. It's catching up. Now, what is it going to do this weekend? This weekend, it's number one. Yeah? All right, my mother's going to go. You and Pops are going? Cool. Now, the church, Denver Bible Church, you're invited to come along with us, or at least come out Sunday morning or evening. But we're going to go Easter as a church, whoever wants to go, to see the Passion of the Christ, Easter Sunday. So that's in a couple weeks, 3 weeks? That's in 3 weeks. Wow. Art and Alice are going to see a movie? The last movie they've seen in the theaters was Gone with the Wind. I can't believe they're going to a movie. I can't even believe it. Well, I'm glad I'm not going because Art's going to get teary-eyed. I don't know if I could take it. It's a great movie. So anyway, it's at $273 million. And The Matrix Reloaded is $281 million, so it's within public school teachers quick. How much of a difference? Quick. $280 million, $273 million? All right, I'm not going to tell you. Figure it out. Get a calculator. So it's really close. And yesterday, how much did The Passion take in yesterday? Because now it's $8 million behind, and movies make all their money on the weekends. Yes, yesterday was a Wednesday, right? Took in $2.5 million on a Wednesday, 3 weeks after it's opened. So it's going to be big. It's going to be the number one all-time domestic gross box office receipts for an R-rated movie. And then it'll start closing in on the other movies, not just the R-rated movies, right? Because if you look at all movies, regardless of their ratings, there's a list of the top 100 all-time biggest box office domestic grosses. And I'll give you an idea of some of the movies on there, and I'll tell you where The Passion is right now. But if you go way down to, like, number 199, way down there, you have The Sound of Music at number 99, $158 million. Although that's not adjusted for inflation. The movie industry never adjusts for inflation, but they should, of course. But anyway, you've got at let's see here. Going up, Beauty and the Beast at number 85, $171 million. And then you've got Top Gun at 75, $176 million. So you keep going up, right? Top Gun, Jurassic Park 3 was number 70. Gladiator was number 60. So this is all movies, G, PG, PG-13, R-rated. This is Gone with the Wind, number 54, about $200 million. And you keep going up, and they got X-Men... Two, all right, Ghostbusters, number 35, $238 million. Toy Story 2, number 30. Batman, number 28. Jaws, number 26. Harry Potter, number 24. The Passion of the Christ, number 22. Of all-time domestic box office hits, all-time, number 22 of all rated movies. It's passed a lot of huge movies with huge all-star casts. Huge. Huge movies. Ghostbusters left that in the dust. Just huge movies have been blown away by The Passion of the Christ. And that's really cool. That idiot movie, Dances with Wolves. You know, that was such a stupid movie. So now The Passion of the Christ is at number 22. And the next movie up, number 21, happens to be the same movie as number one on the R-rated list, which is The Matrix Reloaded. And that we've got 8 million to go. We took in 2.5 million last night. So probably tonight, another 2.5 million Thursday night. So we'll be within 5 million. And then it's the weekend. And Passion of the Christ has been number one for the last 3 weeks. So what's after that? After 281 million in the number 20 slot, all-time domestic gross, is Home Alone. 285 million. You're going down, Home Alone. And then Empire Strikes Back at 290 million. And The Sixth Sense at 293. So they're all going to be, they're all going to lose their place to The Passion of the Christ. And then The Pirates of the Caribbean, which was a really, really funny movie. Really funny, good movie. Pirates of the Caribbean. At 305 million. So now that's 30 million more than The Passion of the Christ. So we will see this weekend what happens. But so how far up the list will it be after this weekend? Because Pirates of the Caribbean at 305 million is number 17. Number 15 is Return of the Jedi. And 14 is Star Wars Episode 2. So, and 12, 13 is Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. So we're getting way up there, way up there. And we're going to see what happens. But after this weekend, it'll be interesting to see where is Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. And let me take a guess. Let me make a couple of predictions here. One, by tomorrow, let's see, we'll capture Osama bin Laden. Then by Monday, The Passion of the Christ will be up at, it'll have beat, it'll be at number 15 and beat Return of the Jedi. All right, that's my prediction. We'll see how we do. Hey, we're out of time. Where did the show go? Where did the show go? Man, no wonder airtime is so expensive, because it goes so quickly. You know, most people buy things. They buy things like a car, a refrigerator, something you could actually punch. We buy airtime here. Try to put airtime in the bank. Try to resell it. Airtime. But we can only do it with your help. This is Bob and Yurt Live, reaching out to the lost, slapping them around once in a while, trying to tell people about God. He's real. There's right and wrong. The Bible is His Word. Jesus Christ rose from the dead. If you're not a Christian, in what way is the evidence for Christ's resurrection insufficient? Try to answer that question and then call into the show sometime. Day or night, we don't care when you call in. If you're not a Christian, in what way is the evidence for Christ's resurrection insufficient? So let us know. See you tomorrow night. And now, and at 3 o'clock tomorrow, now stay tuned. No. Now, to right and risk the consequences.